This morning's topic is faith, which is the first of the 12 links in the Buddhist teaching called Transcendental Dependent Arising. As many of you know, we will be studying Transcendental Dependent Arising all year. Let's see. We have talked about how faith can arise from suffering, and that perpetuating the cycle of dependent origination, or samsara, which begins with ignorance and leads to more suffering, isn't inevitable. When we respond to suffering with faith, we engage a new direction that is forward leading, ultimately leading through several kinds of happiness and tranquility to liberation. The 12 links of dependent origination show how the mind creates a self through distortions of perception, through clinging and craving and becoming, and in some other ways as well. Bhikkhu Bodhi says when we engage in this samsara cycle, we are engaging in a process of compulsive involvement, where one unwise reaction leads to another. By contrast, with transcendental arising, think of the root transform, a process of disengagement leading to deliverance from suffering is present. And in this case, one wise and compassionate response leads to another wise and compassionate response. And it all starts with faith. Well, it does start with suffering. Too, but faith is the first turning towards the transcendental. Last week, we looked into the term faith because some of us may have a history with the word faith, which is connected to a religious authority asking us to adhere to a doctrine and discouraging us from questioning. We might want to use other words, like trust or confidence, instead of the word faith. I think it's healthy to explore our history with both the word and our experiences of faith. And I'm going to share some of my history this morning. So please substitute whichever term works for you. And to the word trusts and to the words trust and confidence and faith, I'm going to add the word knowing. Knowing. That word came up in my discussion breakout group last Sunday. I'll talk later about why I think this word is another option. So we have faith, trust, knowing as possibilities. And you might have another idea. You can reflect on how and where those words land for you. In addition, the faith we're talking about is faith or trust in something greater than ourselves and greater than worldly conditions. It's faith or trust in a spiritual path. The word for faith in Pali, the language of the Buddha, is sada, which means to lay one's heart on what is true. To lay one's heart on what is true. I have to find myself. I just let somebody in. Okay. When I think in those terms, I feel a sense of reverence. In the early days of the Buddha, to declare one's faith, one declared one's alignment with the three jewels or refuges. I take refuge in the Buddha. I take refuge in the Dhamma. And I take refuge in the Sangha. Exploring our history with faith. A memory comes to my mind. I am 6 or 7. I've been watching my parents house hunting. This is a favorite activity of theirs, and I like it too. We've lived in our house for 4 or 5 years, and it's not a perfect house, even though my dad spends most weekends working on maintaining it or renovating it. Some weekends we visit open houses that are a lot more perfect than ours, and we daydream. Now my parents are actually about to buy a new house. I watch my parents preparing to move, and so I ask the big question. Mommy, do we just keep moving from one house to another house? We'll move into this house, and after a while, we'll look for another one and move into that one. And we just keep moving from one house to another forever. I was feeling some despair and asking myself, is this all there is? No, my mom says, at some point we die. I had not expected this answer, even though the forever alternative didn't feel that good either. I knew that people and animals died. My cat had died, and my beloved grandfather had died the year before. But I remember thinking, this can't be all there is. My family did not go to church, so I wasn't steeped in a conventional doctrine of faith beyond the cultural conditioning I received from growing up in 1950s Christian America. One nation under God. Capital G, indivisible. So, why did this memory come to me when I was thinking about faith? I think it shows that even at a young age, I recognized, and I don't think I'm alone, that craving did not feel good. And wanting a house that was better than what my parents and I already had wasn't ever going to satisfy. I sensed the hollowness, which I called now. Dukkha, because it definitely felt unsatisfactory. And then the stirring of the question, is this all there is? Led to a sense that there must be something more. These were seeds of faith, and I started looking for what might be a refuge from the feeling of hollowness in my heart. Since we didn't go to church in my family, I had nothing to push back against. So at first, I tried to find a church that would ring true. I invited myself to my friends' churches. I didn't know what I was looking for exactly, but I did learn what I wasn't looking for. For me, these experiences were social, not spiritual. My spiritual path has been a long and winding road. And actually, my talk is kind of a long and winding road, and I didn't realize what I really was, the po 3 points that I was going to make until I finished it. Last night, I thought, oh, those are the 3 points. Those will be the three prompts. So the 3 points I'm going to be making are right faith. You know, what has been bright faith for you in your life where you just felt an inspiration that brought you to the path and started you out? And what was verified faith? You know, what have you done? What are your experiences with a deepening your faith and making it firmer, truer to you? And doubt. Three things: bright faith, verified faith, doubt. So, my spiritual path, I'll say again, has been a long and winding road, and I'm not going to go into all the twists and turns. I didn't consider Buddhism as my path until I was almost 60 years old. But in high school, I found my first spiritual teacher. She was the poet Emily Dickinson. Joseph Goldstein talks about a variety of ways that faith can be awakened. And one of them happens when, in one wise person, we see a living example that inspires us to have faith that a better way is possible. The Dalai Lama is a person who does this for a lot of people. Thich Nhat Hanh is another. Joseph calls it a leap through faith rather than a leap of faith. My book of the collected poems of Emily Dickinson was on my bedside table, and And as I suffered my way through high school, my mind full of judging and comparing and fixing, mostly of myself, I would go to her poems for refuge. I did this all the way through high school. And here's one that I read so many times, I still remember parts of it. The nearest dream recedes unrealized. The heaven we chase like the June bee before the schoolboy invites the race, stoops to an easy clover, dips, evades, teases, deploys. There's a lot more to it that I've forgotten. In high school, when I was caught up in the worldly winds of pleasure and pain, praise and blame, loss and gain, fame and disrepute, Emily Dickinson's poems took me to what felt like a deeper, truer place where I could learn and not just suffer. In my early 20s, I continued finding poets that would help me understand the meaning of life. I also read many books by Carl Jung and learned about psychology and dreams. I read Joseph Campbell and learned about mythology. He introduced me to the book Black Elk Speaks and Indigenous Religions, which helped me connect spiritually with nature. And that was very important. Last week, when I was in my breakout group, again discussing faith, I remembered a line from where I didn't know, but I shared it with my breakout partners. From wonder into wonder, existence opens. I Googled the line later and remembered my mother giving me a copy of Lao Tzu's book, The Way of Life, when I was in college. Here's a longer excerpt from that book, translated by Witter Binner. Existence is beyond the power of words to define. Terms may be used, but are none of them absolute. In the beginning of heaven and earth, there were no words. Words came out of the womb of matter. And whether a man dispassionately sees to the core of life or passionately sees the surface, the core and the surface are essentially the same. Words making them seem different, only to express appearance. If name be needed, wonder names them both. From wonder into wonder, existence opens. From wonder into wonder, existence opens. I wanted to hear those words again. I felt a sense of knowing. This is what it's all about. This is what makes life worth living. Now I think, isn't this what Rodney was talking about, our guiding teacher, earlier this month in his retreat when he talked about the Heart Sutra? Form is emptiness, emptiness is form, form is not separate from emptiness. And I thought, yes, I have the faith in the truth of this path. But do I have faith in myself? I'm going to conclude with this aspect of faith, the ahipasiko of faith, that is so important. We can't just believe, we have to see for ourselves. We start with outward faith, but it comes back to faith in our ability to understand and see for ourselves. Bright faith leads to verified faith through meditation and investigation, which are the first two of the seven factors of awakening. Ajahn Chah says, he's a Thai forest leader Thai forest guiding teacher who taught many of the teachers like Joseph Goldstein and many other teachers in Western Buddhism. And he said, the practice always comes down to the single point of right here. When something arises, it arises right here, a lot or a little. When it originates right here. Where else? When it ceases right here. The Buddha called this point the knowing. When it knows the way things are, in relation to the truth, we all know the understanding of the mind. We will know the understanding of the mind. This is the piece I was missing when I came to Buddhism. When I took the introduction to the meditation class at Seattle Insight and began to practice insight meditation, I was given tools to see for myself, but I wasn't very confident. There's knowing and there's knowing. And I remember reading some of Joseph Goldstein's books and listening to his talks when I was starting out. I remember him saying what his teacher Munindraji had told him when he was starting out. Munindraji said, if you want to understand your mind, sit down and observe it. I thought at the time, this is harder than believing. And I was doubtful. Do I really have the ability to understand like a scientist just by observation? I don't feel that smart or wise. Nevertheless, I trusted Joseph. And later, I was inspired by Munindra's words. These were him saying really the same thing in a different way. Sit and know you are sitting, and the whole of the Dharma will be revealed. I wasn't sure that was true, but by this time, I had been practicing 12 years, and I was learning how powerful being present was, and that there was simplicity in truth. Relax, observe, allow, Rodney said. I took Munindra's words with me to a week-long retreat at Insight Meditation Center in Massachusetts and used them like a mantra during my sits to stay awake as I suffered with jet lag and a bad cold. Sit and know I am sitting. Do I know I am sitting? Yes. Sit and know. Do I know I am sitting? Yes. Sitting, knowing, sitting, knowing, sitting. Eventually, instead of continually drifting off and catching myself just as I was about to fall over, energy mysteriously came up from nowhere. For the rest of the retreat, I was alert, and at every sit, even though my cold persisted, I was alert. And I also realized that I was not at the control center of my sitting. I was beginning to see that maybe part of the Dharma to be revealed did not depend on the intellect that I usually relied on. Surprisingly, that gave me more faith in myself because it gave me the sense that there was more to me than I thought. There was something greater than myself, and I was connected to it, a mystery. In order to have faith in myself and my ability to follow the Noble Eightfold Path all the way to awakening, it will take investigating my doubt in myself and also turning inward, seeing myself completely, no part left out. In his book, One Dharma, Joseph quotes Stephen Batchelor, the Buddhist scholar, who says, "We need the faith to doubt. This is how we strengthen faith." I've always found inspiration in the story of the Buddha under the rose apple tree because it includes both doubt and faith. He's gone forth now in the story and has been seeking the truth, true path for 6 years, but now is full of doubt about the ascetic path he has been following. And he says, "I've spent 6 years like a man trying to tie the air into knots. I've tried to crush my mind with awareness, but awareness has not invaded my mind and remained." He's living on a diet of juice squeezed from beans and peas, and he's on the verge of starvation. But this doubt leads him to have enough faith to ask the question, "Might there be another way?" And his answer comes from within in the form of a memory of himself as a young boy. This wasn't an answer that came from the Buddha's intellect or from any teacher or other authority. It came from a place of intuition and insight within him. I'd say it came from his heart as a knowing, like an inner wisdom. And here's an excerpt, the way he tells it. I recall once when my father, the Sakyan, was working and I was sitting in the cool shade of a rose apple tree, then quite withdrawn from sensuality, withdrawn from unskillful mental qualities, I entered and remained in the first jhana, rapture and pleasure born from withdrawal, accompanied by direct thought and evaluation. Could that be the path of an awakening? Then, following on that memory, came the realization that is the path to awakening. So why am I afraid of that pleasure? That has nothing to do with sensuality, nothing to do with unskillful mental qualities. I thought, I am no longer afraid of that pleasure. But it is not easy to achieve that pleasure with a body so extremely emaciated. So I took some solid food, some rice and porridge. That story helps me remember to value and not discount my inner truth. When other contemplatives saw him taking some solid food, some rice and porridge, he continues, they were disgusted and left me thinking, Gotama, the contemplative, is living luxuriously. He's abandoned his exertion and is backsliding into abundance. But the Buddha, who was still Gotama at the time, didn't waver. He knew he had found the middle way. Shortly after this, he sat down under the Bodhi tree and became the Buddha. I think when Mara challenged him during that night, questioning his merit, when the Buddha touched the ground, asking the earth to be witness to his merit, that Gotama recognized his many lifetimes of cultivating the paramis, the 10 perfections, generosity, ethics, renunciation, we studied them last year, patience, truthfulness, qualities like that, kindness. That gave him confidence in his readiness, his merit, his worthiness for awakening. And this story reminds me that it is a noble thing to pay attention to and have faith in our goodness. In conclusion, faith arising from suffering starts us out on a transformational path towards awakening. And often our faith is inspired by wisdom and compassion from outside ourselves. Ultimately, we need to turn inward to verify and deepen our faith. Doubting and questioning are part of that process. So now we have time to talk about faith, truth, or confidence, trust. So I'm going to suggest that a couple, well, I'm going to suggest three things possibly. It could be doubt that you want to talk about. It could be right faith. It could be verifying faith. And you really are open to talk about anything else. But I'm going to allow this time to be an open discussion, just kind of see, we've been talking about faith for a month now, and see what's coming up for you. So, who would like to start out?
I have my hand raised, so unless anybody else wants to speak first. I don't really have like a, excuse me, a closed statement on this, but I'm curious other people's thoughts or if they're kind of experiencing similar things. But I am struggling with that faith in the doubt. And I totally am seeing the balance between like when there's doubt, our faith is growing. But, and I feel like in hindsight of that doubt, I can have a lot of reflection within myself and kind of rebuild some of that faith. But I'm really struggling in those moments to hold that and hold that presence and hold that peace. I'm seeing it grow, I think, with each week as I'm more mindful and aware of it. But that is kind of my hill that I'm trying to work through right now. Thank you.
Andy, can I ask you if you're doubting yourself more or doubting the teachings more?
No, I think I'm definitely doubting myself. And I think when I lose the doubt that I have the tools to get through whatever situation, or that I have the knowledge or the awareness that, yeah, I don't know. It's the doubt within myself.
Well, I just like to hear from other people and see what how you're feeling about doubt. I can talk about it too, but I just wonder if other people have are exploring doubt, or if that is something that's coming up for you, or if you remember, if you don't have any doubt right now, do you remember doubting? Faith, yes, please. Oh, you've got to. Oh, maybe. Yeah, you need to unmute.
I was agreeing, not ready to speak, but of course I'm always ready to speak. That's one of my
Great.
things. And I kind of hesitate to make a commitment to anything. And I'll listen more to what other people think I should be doing about something and then go from there. Oh, I don't agree, or I agree, rather than originating inside myself. And I did decide to make a commitment to coming to Sims and your activities, saying, I'm going to see what happens if I just go and sit with everyone without my arms crossed across my chest, or just thinking I have to do this because that's what I was committed to or grew up with. So just coming. And I think that bringing doubt and faith all in a lump, but just showing up is a way to deal with this. And I do the same when I'm meditating. Let's see what happens. And oh yeah, this old familiar thing and that. And just letting it be without pushing or pulling or am I, yeah, so that's.
Yeah.
100%. I'm seeing that, like, I can take the acceptance and I turn it into attachment sometimes, and that's a really, like, wonderful reminder to kind of stay in the acceptance area. Sorry, I didn't.
No, that's great. Thank you.
Thank you, Faith. I had to laugh because your name is Faith. Yeah. Suze, go ahead.
I've struggled with fear most of my life and have realized that what it really is a lack of confidence in myself. And when I've the Dharma has given me such a healthy container to look at all of that. And the faith in self, of being able to deal with life, and also the way one deals with life, that is so much from the Dharma of being with the way things truly are, not with my fantasy or my trying to describe it in a certain way. And then a reminder that somebody said, maybe it was last week or maybe on Monday night, that the opposite of faith is not doubt, it's despair. And that's a really helpful reminder for me. And also, I really liked what you said, Lauren, a lot of what you said, and the having faith in the doubt. Because the doubt can be a really helpful doorway to investigate more fully what's going on. And that's been a helpful one for me around the fear is really a lack of confidence in myself. Anyway, those are my two bits worth.
Thank you. It reminds me, the fear thing reminds me of hearing Joseph in some talks, Joseph Goldstein, say that he really lived with a lot of fear himself. And I don't know if other people have heard him say this. And he was talking to, and it went on and on. It was like, it did not end. It was like started in childhood, and he was still feeling it after all the practice, he still had fear. And he said to Sharon Salzberg, another longtime teacher, I don't know what I'm going to do. I just can't get rid of this fear. And Sharon said, and he said that it meant a lot to him. She said, it's just fear. You know, it's just fear. And it kind of shifted. It's just this. It's just fear. And so what does that show us about confidence? Well, it to me, when I heard that, because that helped me, because I have a lot of fear, the practice of meditation, being present with everything, all parts, we can do that. Mm-hmm. We can sit with it.
Yeah. And everything that Joseph said about his fear,
yeah,
he asked himself, if this is present for the rest of my life,
yes,
can I be okay with it?
Yes.
And that has stayed with me so much,
yes,
that if a whole bunch of crap shows up in my deathbed,
yes,
can I just be okay with it?
Yeah.
And not get pissed off, you know?
Yeah.
So, I found his story really inspiring as
yeah.
well.
Yeah. So even doubt, being with doubt. So let's go on to others. Thank you, Suze. Mike, go ahead.
Yeah, let me get my, okay. Oh. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay. I'm having a little bit of difficulty relating to the conversation. Maybe it's the choice of the word faith. Yeah, another one was trust. I've been meditating now for about, 40 years. And I, what I think of is when I'm sitting or laying down and I'm meditating, if I were to ask myself, how am I? And the answer that comes back is, I'm okay. I'm fine in this moment. There's nothing in my mind. And thoughts that come into the mind go away like clouds. I just watch them go and come and go. And so maybe a word for me that expresses faith would be serenity. I'm okay. I'm serene now. I'm fine. Everything is okay in my universe. So I can have faith in the calmness and the goodness of my own being.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? That there's,
yeah,
there's nothing.
I see. Yeah. I think from wonder into wonder, existence opens. You know, it's not a fixed thing, but we use faith and we use the qualities of those links to help us, you know, they're, but in the end, there's no words.
Yeah.
So great. I think I'm open. I said there probably would be other words people would find. And I think to me, that makes sense to me.
Yeah. I think of equanimity, a balance, an evenness of mind.
Yeah.
And simply abiding in equanimity.
Yes.
And then feeling that within one's being.
Oh, yeah.
This feels good.
Yes.
This feels good.
Yes.
Life is good.
Yeah. It's interesting you said abiding in that. And I remember when I first started on the path, I remember saying abiding. I said, I'm learning that word really has a lot of meaning that I never thought of before. And just when you brought it up now, I thought, yeah, that word does have a lot of meaning. And so maybe abiding is another one that we could add to our possibilities.
And I say this not to prayer. Every now and then, may I be peaceful.
Yeah.
May I be happy. May I never be separated from sorrowless bliss. May I abide in equanimity, free of bias, attachment, and anger. And when I say those, I just feel
yeah
the vibration of those words, and everything is well in that universe.
Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you. This group is a wonderful group, and I really have appreciated being part of it. Thank you. And Rodney, I've taken numerous courses from Rodney, and I really appreciate him as well.
Oh, thank you for coming to these. Glad. Thank you. Judith.
Hi. Thanks, Lauren, for your talk. I could relate to many things. It was Sharon Salzberg that said that despair is the opposite of faith, not doubt. And also, speaking of the word abiding, that was her last stage of faith, was abiding faith, which is interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. And anyway, what I was actually going to say is I seem to be in this, I hadn't really thought of this as relating to doubt, but lately I have found myself sometimes spontaneously reacting in a skillful way, which I would not have done, and being totally astonished, you know, that, I mean, I'm used to reacting at first in an unskillful way and then sitting with it and watching it be transformed. But sometimes I just spontaneously react, oh my God, what happened? You know, where's that old pattern? And I was just thinking of that. Maybe that is kind of a kind of doubt, like in myself, you know, that I could actually relate rationally, skillfully to something spontaneously. I don't know. That just occurred to me.
I mean, I think it's a sign of the power of what can operate without us doing anything, is showing us we could have a lot more faith than we might have. But at the same time, I know that doubt, and I think that's a good, I think it's a good thing to notice how we underestimate. I mean, I think it's a conditioning in our culture that does that, so that we really need to be more aware of discounting our goodness.
Yeah, and I'm thinking of, you know, Tuareg saying, well, the Dharma does you. Well, not just Tuareg, but a lot of people saying the Dharma does you, and you can't force the mind to let go, but you just keep practicing.
Yeah.
And then it will. But the fact that it astonishes me so much.
Yeah.
You know, when it happens, it's like, oh, this does work.
Right. It just kind of shows.
Yeah.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Lillian or Nikhil?
Thanks for the talk, Lauren. I really related to the story you told about when you were a kid looking for the other houses and that cycle kind of craving. Because I think in my life I've noticed, probably starting somewhere as a kid, but then specifically during my teenage years, having the sense that this isn't all that life is, that there has to be something more, and there's being the sense of craving and seeking and emptiness and doubt. And, you know, seeking in different places, like, for example, like trying to find that friend or that boyfriend or that alcoholic drink that would like turn things on and make life feel better for me. And then I think in my 20s, kind of coming more into like, well, should I be religious? Should I try some religious path? And then I think finally, you know, finding this path through Sims, and I think, you know, when I do sort of veer off the path and find those experiences of doubt, a lot of times what brings me back is like, just like the sheer truth of the awareness, the sheer truth of like this path being centered around experiencing and being aware of experiencing, and kind of finding that unavoidable in a way. And I think I related also to what you said in another comment about about fear, where once we kind of start to notice just, oh, the fear is just, that's just fear. That's just another part of experience. I think for me with craving, it's become the same, where I've kind of just started to see, oh, craving is just kind of part of this experience. It's not this evidence of this lack in, you know, myself or just in life. But yeah, thank you for the talk. It's shown an interesting light for me on the idea of faith.
Thank you, Lillian. Truth. Yeah, truth is a big part, isn't it? Nina, go ahead. You're working on it, Nina.
Trying to unmute. Yes. Oh, thank you, Lauren, for the talk. And I love that you talked about wonder. Because for me, that's a part of the, I think that's a part of my connection to the faith. And, you know, in the years, and especially this year, and that we've gone through the noble truths, and now with transcendence, it's like I'm really becoming aware of experiencing the freeing of myself and others as a result of from dukkha. And that is, you know, as Judith said, it's like, you know, surprising, but it's wondrous. It's a wondrous mm-hmm. thing, you know, and it's beautiful, you know, even though it is impermanent. But, you know, just having that experience of being able to recognize and free myself of possible dukkha or dukkha that I'm in, and not getting involved in it, but freeing myself. That's for me a wondrous thing, and yeah. really and fortifies my faith in the dukkha and my faith in continuing, even when, you know, I waver or, you know.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, Nina. Jeremy.
All right. I have a bit of a sort of like a counter feeling. I've been thinking a lot about how someone mentioned that like doubt is an opportunity to sort of figure out what's actually going on. I've been thinking a lot about how I feel very like blessed and lucky that this community has so many people much older than me who have sometimes been doing this practice even for longer than I've been alive. And that's filled me with a lot of sort of like hope. But sometimes it also kind of does the opposite to me, because I think a big part of my doubt is this sense of like, wait, give me a sec. I think this sense of like urgency that I have never really been able to shed. But like I'm going to be turning 30 soon, and I'm at this really crazy turning point in my life. Outside of that, where I feel this sense that I really have to like figure things out and get things under control and sort of figure out the rest of my life. And I think this practice is really important, but I also feel like if I do have this faith that it can provide me this way out of like my inner conflict, if that happens in 20 years, or if it just takes so long that I give up, that I lose that faith, then I fear that I'll have this like intense sense of like regret. I spent so much time and effort doing this and that I'm still suffering all these ways. So I've realized that this sense of, the sense of time moving by, the sense of urgency is one of the core things that when I don't feel the faith, but that's, I think, where it's coming from. And I'm curious what people's thoughts are on that.
That's important, what you're talking about. And I was just talking to, had an interview with Rodney Smith, our teacher, and he does talks on time. And I was asking him about my, you know, because I didn't start this path till I was 60. So I often look, you know, and think, oh, I wish I'd come when I was younger. But what Rodney says is that this just now, and now is what is important. And when we go to the future, when we keep going to the future, we're borrowing time, and it's a debt. So it's really important to stay right here now, that everything is now, which is hard. So, but I was just talking to him about that. So I understand that that's the way we frame things. And so I think if other people have things to add to that, it would be great, because you do, I know that you shared that this is a very hard time that you're going through. So I just want to say I understand that, and I wish you the best, but I hope you can find the moment and the connection right now.
Did you say more about the idea of borrowing time and it being a debt?
Yeah, he gave an example. He said, you know, this is a pretty lightweight one, but he said he caught himself on a walk, you know, it was just a casual walk, and seeing the light was going to change up ahead of him, and he started leaning towards getting through that light before it changed. And then he stopped and he said, what am I doing? I am out in the future, not needing to be. At that moment, he's not present. He is trying, he's in the future where he might miss that light, and all his attention is on that happening, what's going to happen next. So he brought himself back to this moment, because that's where the peace is. That's where it's like right here. It's what Ajahn Chah said. He says it's right here. It's not there. It's right here. So we keep coming back to right here. That's the way. That's what I was thinking. But I think other people. Nina, are you taking your hand down or putting it up again?
I'm putting it up again.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so, I think I'd like to say something about that. I think after years of practice, it takes a while to continue to remind myself during my meditation practice that I have to stay in the present, that I have to stay here, that I have to be here. And that's what has helped me. And then I keep going back to what Joseph Goldstein said, is don't waste your dukkha. You know, investigate it. Look into it. And maybe you don't get an answer, but sometimes it is revealed to you. Sometimes the insight comes. But I think that intentionally, having the intention to be in the present is a big step.
Thank you, Nina. Now, I know Candace has been waiting, so I'm going to say Candace. Thank you.
It's funny. I was going to talk about staying, but before I do that, I just wanted to share something with Jeremy that I have worked with, especially when I'm getting into a depressive state, and it's often because I'm worried about whether I'll be able to cope with something in the future. And we actually can deal with everything that's happening right in this moment. You know, if we come back to this present, we realize, and that thing that's going to happen in the future, that will be our present for us. At that moment, we don't know how much we will have changed by the time that happens to us. And that's the little magic trick that somehow I needed to learn, that I am losing faith in the future me, that everything I'm doing in this moment, that I'm okay in this moment. That's going to be true of whatever happens, because I will have changed. It will have come on me gradually. So whatever I'm doing now, I'm kind of building the strength and the courage and the abilities to deal with what's coming in the future. And that, it took me so long to really get that in my head, that it was this phrase in a book about the Zen path through depression that, you know, said, it was a meditation. I am fine in this moment. In this moment, I am fine. I am sitting here. And I didn't get it. I thought, boy, this is oversimplified. How do I know that I'm fine? Well, you do know that you're fine because you're sitting right here and your head isn't exploding. And so, and it kind of goes along with something that I was going to share. It's something that I keep on my desk from Pema Chodron about staying. That really helped me when I was beginning meditating. She says, stay, stay, just stay. So whenever we wander off, we gently encourage ourselves to stay and settle down. Are we experiencing restlessness? Stay. Discursive mind? Stay. Aching knees and throbbing back? Stay. What's for lunch? Stay. What am I doing here? Stay. I can't stand this another minute. Stay. That is how we cultivate steadfastness. I have always loved that from Pema because it's so human. It's so true. And yeah, that's the muscle to learn how to abide, to stay. So I hope some of that helps.
It does. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, we're coming to our close. Thank you, Jeremy, for having that question, bringing that up. And thank you, Candace, very much. Thank you, everyone. Just a very brief meta. May we and all beings be safe and protected from harm. And abide in peace. Thank you, everyone.